Are we going?
Into podcast.
Potter Who Cast.
Advertiser call.
Billis Major at your service.
Don't forget me.
Sarah, did you forget me?
Oh, let's go, that's class!
There is no such thing as...
Doctor Who, Series 5, Episode 11. The Lodger.
No, no, we're closed. Get out of. I don't want this.
I'm James
Corden. No.
No. I'm ringing your doorbell.
Do you think Moffat lives in regret of knowing he facilitated the rise of James Corden?
I think he spends his days
not caring about it.
I think he's blocked this out of his mind. The Lodger. I hardly knew her. If you can hear that in the background, that is my dog
barking. Because you said James Corden, and he went, no,
please no. Broadcast.
No. Wait.
Broadcast June 12th, 2010. Top of the box office, June 12th, 2010. What do you think it was? I can give you a clue. It's animated.
Is it Shrek Forever After?
It's not, but it's another sequel to an animated franchise. And this one is like, this is a huge film. It does something in a couple of months that not many films of its ilk does.
Is it Frozen?
It's not Frozen, but you're thinking of a similar company.
Is it Tangled?
It's not Tangled, but it's in, okay, so it is technically made by Disney. It's made by a company that Disney owns. It's a sequel, and it's considered to be like one of the, people would say like, oh, it's one of the best movies of all time. I wouldn't necessarily meet them at that point.
Jeez, what is this? I don't know.
It's a threequel, put it that way.
Animated threequel.
It ends up being nominated for a very big award. Unlike a lot of other animated films. And
Toy Story 3.
Toy Story 3. Top of the box.
Why did it take me so long to guess Toy Story 3? I'm so sorry.
Best Picture nominee, Toy Story 3. Directed by Catherine.
Best Picture nominee, Toy Story 3.
Directed by Catherine Moorehead, who did Amy's Choice, of course. So.
Toy Story 3? I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah. Leo Richard should talk to him. Written by
he actually would be really good.
He would be good. Speaking of people who aren't good, written by Barrett Boberts, based off of his Doctor Who magazine comic featuring Ten and Mickey. I don't know if you've ever read The Lodger. It's not really like this. It's just Mickey's hanging out back home, and then Ten's like, I need to crash at your place. And then 10 kind of does what 11 does in this, only it's like, you know, annoying Mickey. And then there's like an alien fleet that come to invade, and he like turns the earth invisible or something. So they leave. Mm-hmm. It's nothing really like this. Because this one is about how the Doctor gets booted out of the TARDIS by accident, and the ship gets stuck. The ship is caught in a time loop, and he has to live with James Corden until the time loop ends, because there's an evil spaceship on top of their house. That implodes because whatever. I don't know. It's an interesting one because
this episode is ruined by the fact that we all loathe this man now.
Mm-hmm. I think
he's really good in this.
He's really good.
I almost believed he was a human being.
Mm-hmm. I thought the bit where he and the alien spaceship get in the car and sing like Elton John songs for like half an hour was a bit weird, but like other than that, like, I don't know. I
think let's get all of the fucking things out of. All right. Blah, blah, blah. He's
dancing, dresses a mouse.
My beef with James Corden is personal because he replaced Craig Ferguson.
Mm-hmm.
And Craig Ferguson was still is my favorite late night talk show host. And to go from Craig Ferguson to James Corden was such a dip. That is my problem with him. I'm like, just it is on a purely instinctual, aesthetic, cultural level. I just really miss Craig Ferguson.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to give it to him, even though on no circumstances do you have to hand it to him. He's good in this. Mm-hmm. He is good.
I think it's interesting that, like, the week after they got the rom-com writer to write an episode, we get a rom-com that, like, feels like an actual rom-com.
Yes.
I think they're both good in it. My main problem with this one is that, what's the deal with the upstairs spaceship? What's the deal with all that? Because try as they might, there's like no relax.
Well, I know for starters,
I know
is everyone in this city, Colchester, so gullible? Because if I was walking down the street and somebody goes to the intercom like, "Can you help me?" I would go, "Yes," and they go, "Can you go upstairs?" And I would go, "No,
no,
I will not do that." Actually, so have fun, bye.
So obviously, the thing was that originally the idea was, it was going to be like Megalos in his spaceship, and the joke would be that the Doctor would go up, and the Megalos would be like, "The Doctor, we meet again, my revenge." And the Doctor would be like, "Who are you?" And the joke would be like, "Oh, Megalos is so shit that the Doctor forgot who Megalos is," and Megalos it'd be the little like jokes being like, "Oh, Megalos, yeah, I remember you. You were from that thing," and then Megalos would be like, "You don't remember me at all, do you?" Which would have been, you know, probably gotten old, but their solution to not doing that was, let's just make a spaceship. It looks like a TARDIS. They comment on how it looks like a TARDIS. We won't explain why this is. We'll basically explain why next season, but we won't really, like, you know, properly explain why. It's a really, really weird creative choice to, like, just do that, because it doesn't really feel like there's any closure to it, because there's like it's just like it's that classic thing of, like, you know, love will save the day, but, like, it feels like such a setup to do that kind of ending rather than being like a natural, like, extension of, like, you know, that kind of ending. I don't know.
Yeah. What can I say? This episode is, I agree with you, because this episode is great when it's just about him hanging out.
Mm-hmm.
And every time we go back to that fucking upstairs, it's like, why is everyone so, like, this is, and then the solution is, you know, think about the thing you really miss, blah, blah. Oh, I'm going to miss him. I love you. It's like, okay, all right, I guess. All right, back. All right, let's wrap it up and goodbye. That's it.
Mm.
It's like, it's so shoved into the end of the episode, which is fine, because that's not what the episode is about. The episode is about Craig, and, you know, he's like the sympathetic figure, and we are on his side because he's an underdog, and then the Doctor shows up and makes him feel even more of an underdog than usual, and we want him to stand up, but also we're like, what is this thing that's going on with the thing upstairs? And it's like, oh my god. And then the answer is, it's boring.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the answer is, it sucks. That's the answer.
The answer is, you'll find out. And then when you find out, it's like, oh, well, that wasn't really. I always wondered, when they do that in Series 6, when they're like, this is why this spaceship was up there, if that was because they saw the set and they were like, we should probably use this for something else, rather than it being like, you know, we're gonna reveal this next time what this is, because it just feels like a weird, like, choice to throw us in out of nowhere. Yeah, I don't know. I don't want to be like, you know, I don't want this to go for like 10 minutes and this end, but, like, there's nothing really to talk about this one beyond, like, you know,
yeah,
James Corden.
Flimsy.
It's so, yeah, I don't know. It's just, like, I think it's a well-structured episode. I think it's got a really, really long cold open for some reason. The cold open's like 20 minutes long. Drive My Car Who. It's just a really, like, it's just, I want to put this forward. It's Barrett Bobbert's best episode, I think, in general.
Well, let me look at that. Yep, probably.
Yeah.
I still have a soft spot for Unicorn and the Wasp. Even I'm willing to admit it's failures.
I tell you that one.
I think in a purely, you know, if we have to be objective, then yes, that is correct. Mm-hmm. It is the best
because
that the deceased Roberts did.
He's got two after this. He's got Closing Time.
Closing Time. The Caretaker.
Because Closing Time is basically just this again, but with Cybermen.
I love it. I love it when it's like this again.
Mm-hmm. It's more or less like the exact same beats of this, but like instead it's like, you know,
he has a baby now.
He's a baby now. And there's a shopping center. And then
I feel like there's something to be done here with, like, you know, a showrunner being like, all right, I'm going to have like every series the doctor goes to visit this random human and has like a very normal, non-alien adventure with him.
Mm-hmm.
And we just catch up on like their budding relationship and as it develops and all that. I think, you know, there's potential in that, but it just does not like manifest itself here because the actual alien stuff is so whatever, and it's so shoved to the side, and the whole time you're just like, the doctor's so focused on it that he barely like actually intervenes in the Craig and Sophie romance. The best scene about that is when he like makes Sophie realize that she should pursue her dreams. And that there's something else tying her down. That is the best scene in the entire episode because that is the first time where it's like, all right, what if you had like a character like the doctor in a rom-com? That's a great little moment.
Mm.
But it is not, it is like a little moment. It is not pervasive throughout the rest of the episode. And as a result, it just doesn't manifest into more than that, you know?
Mm. It just feels like, you know, so saying that, like, you know, the spaceship stuff and the time loop stuff kind of just comes in secondary. Doesn't really get
time
much
loop
of
stuff is so weird.
I don't get it.
Yeah. It doesn't really factor into it. It's just a way to show that they're doing it, but also they're showing us the machine taking the people. So why do I don't know, man? Mm-hmm. It's so like, I almost wish there's somebody would just put their hands into this episode and split it apart and just have it be a fucking story about like, he's just like hanging out, and that's it. Mm-hmm. There's no bad guys.
If you could do it like, you know, he has to make sure that they get together because, you know, something in the future relies on like on them being together. Like something like even like something small in this grander thing relies on like them being a couple, and then you focus on that rather than being like, you know, we need a threat here. So we like if basically what I'm saying, if this was just like like Back to the Future, only without like, you know, I guess, Marvin Berry. I don't know who the Marvin Berry here. I don't know.
Right.
Gaga, it's your cousin, Duke Gaga. Gonna want to hear this, and then I don't know. But it's just like it just feels like it feels obligated to try and do like an alien kind of thing in it, and the alien side doesn't feel like even if you're going to do like an alien side of things, it could be more like thematically kind of tied to going on.
They do hook it in at the end, but it comes out of like, okay, I guess this is it. It's also very telling. This episode has like three cold opens. You know, there's the stuff with the doctor being booted out of the TARDIS. There's the stuff with Craig needing a new lodger, and there's the stuff with the thing upstairs, right? So it's like it's setting up all these balls, and it never really juggles them into like any kind of quick succession or like any seeming fat, like it just feels like, and then this happened, and then this happened. But the things that are happening are so okay that you're just like, I guess, okay, all right, no problem, cool. That it never really turns into like something egregious or, you know, something that would actually make you go, ugh. You know, but other than that, it's just fine. And the thing is that sucks to admit within the context of today is that fucking James Corden is the best part of this episode. Mm-hmm. You know, he is a genuinely charismatic presence. I like that his jealousy of the doctor is never like... Oh, sorry, my microphone fell. His jealousy of the doctor is never like... unjustified, you know. Mm-hmm. It is kind of like, it is very like, oh yeah, this is the thing, that the one thing he's good at, and then the doctor comes in and like makes it all about him. So when he does say you gotta leave, it does feel like a justified moment, but at the same time it's like that scene where he's like, you gotta go, they talk about it so much, and then like nothing happens out of it because they immediately go fix the robot, the alien plot.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's something, it's mm-hmm. something.
His James Corden's acting career is so interesting because like the same year as this, he's in Gulliver's Travels, and
I don't think about that movie.
Yeah, after that he's in the Three Musketeers. He's in the Paul Potts biopic One Chance, which is Paul Potts probably means nothing to you, but Paul Potts was like, you know when like when, you know. This is coming on to me because I watched the American Idol Experience defunct band video recently. But like, you know how like, you know,
I love that video.
Yeah, you know,
just have fun with it.
Have fun. Yeah. The you know how like those 2000s talent shows, those like the winners were like huge. You know, Kelly Clarkson.
Yes.
And from my like understanding, like the experience with like Britain's Got Talent winners seems to be very mixed in terms of like, you know, that's the one that like didn't land. And Paul Potts was a guy who worked in a shop called Carphone Warehouse is what it was. I think it's changed now, but he was, he was a manager of like a phone shop, mobile phone shop. And he went on to Britain's Got Talent, and he was an opera singer, and he like, he won because he sang like Ness and Dorman. Like they were like, Simon Cowell was like, oh my god, like the whole thing was like, it was like that Susan Boyle thing. People were like, oh my god, he's so ugly, but he's such a great singer, you know. It was mm-hmm. that kind of like thing. So it's a really awkward thing. But like James Corden plays him in this biopic, and it's like 2013. He won in like you know, he won like years before this. He's not like relevant anymore. It's a really weird, like, you know, it's a weird move for him. It's a weird move for like everyone. But after that, he's in, he's got the 1-2 punch of Begin Again with Mark Ruffalo and Keira Knightley. And then he's the baker in Into the Woods.
But by then, it's already like,
by then,
he's already doing. Yeah.
Well, no, by that, like, that's 2014. 2015, he starts off.
No. Doing, oh, yeah, you're right. 2014, Into the Woods.
Yeah, so he does 2014 Into the Woods. 2015, he starts hosting late night shows, and now he's back to he's started going doing acting again. He's outside of like, you know, Cinderella, where, you know, he ends up promoting it on the motorway by like humping a car. He was in like something recently, some TV show in 2022. And that was like the big thing. Like, I'm back acting. I'm back being a serious actor. And he's done nothing since. So like, I don't know what's going on there. But it's just like an interesting acting career for someone who is like, I think he's forgotten how to be normal. And really, like, it's really awkward trying to see him trying to like, you know, return to being like, I'm a serious actor, or like, I'm a normal actor.
Right.
Like, all you can think of is like, I'm in the car doing karaoke with like fucking Katy Perry.
It's also like, I feel the thing about James Corden, it isn't so much that his performances aren't fun, which they are not. I saw Cats 3 times. Cats was one of the last movies I saw in theaters at Rowdy Screening, and he's not good in it. But I feel like the thing is, it just felt like everyone was trying to make him work for a while. They were so desperate to make him work. It's like, please make him work. It also, it reminded me of what happened with Russell Brand when he became a hit here. Like, it felt like everyone was just like, we got to make this guy work. This guy is our new fucking thing. Put him in everything. Put him in Despicable Me. Put him in Forgetting Sarah Marshall. Put him in this. Put him in that. And it felt like James Gordon, the same thing happened to him. And it felt like that's the last time that anyone's ever going to try to do that. Of just be like, yeah, let's put him on everything. Because I feel almost, I can't believe I'm about to say it, but I almost feel like it's not fully his fault that everyone was like, yeah, let's put you in everything.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I feel like no one can kind of do that anymore. What's the last time that you saw somebody do that shit and like actually like succeed at being on everything? Like, it was in the fucking 90s. Like, I can't even name a person who went through that. So to me,
yeah,
I feel like, you know, if I was him, I would just go to sleep for a little bit. Also, he did the Late Late Show for 8 years. Guy is probably loaded to back in hell. He should just like just go to sleep. You know, just go to sleep for a while.
I think what he needs, and this is also a very belabored analogy, he needs his Oppenheimer moment. He needs, like, you know, the way Robert Downey Jr. was like, the way Robert Downey Jr. was being very open on like the presser, being like, you know, Christopher Nolan like saved my life because I was rolling shit. Now I'm back in demand. He needs that project where, like, you know, people are like, oh my god, it's James Gordon. Because he the Mike Leigh film All or Nothing, he's in that. He's absolutely incredible in that. Like, he needs like a moment where he can remind people, like, I can actually, like, you know, I can act. I can be like a good actor. The thing is, and as you're saying, like, you know, he's loaded, whatever. Does he have the interest to want to like pursue stuff like that anymore? Or is he just happy to be like, you know, I can just relax for a while. And then, you know, if I want to do something, I can pick this up, or I can do that. I can do like a big finish where Craig comes back and he meets, like, you know.
No, by God, if we ever, the instant he does, I love Big Finish. The instant he does Big Finish, that's it. I'll lock it up. He will never leave that place ever again. He will forever become Craig is going to meet the fourth doctor. Craig is going to meet the fifth doctor. Craig is going to meet the Rutons. That's it. He's never coming. If he does it, he's never coming back. Which is why he should do it. You know what? Now that I said it, I want to see. Just do the lodger with every single doctor. Just like, I'm your new lodger. I really think I might be your new lodger. Like, just do that. They should, hold on. Yeah. Sorry. This is actually a good idea. They should do a Big Finish box that is just like, what if other doctors were in other doctor stories? Because they would go differently. And I just want to see the version of the lodger with the sixth doctor where it just ends with sixth doctor like killing Craig, choking him to death. Like, you're too boring. just choking him to death. I do want to say, the last thing I want to say about this episode is a chill ran down my blood when Craig said, if you ever want to bring back a boyfriend, I said, oh no. Oh no, they're gonna do some gay panic joke, and then they didn't. And it kind of dawned on me, that is really one of the last frontiers for Doctor Who, in the sense of, like, you know, we've had a woman doctor, we now have a non-white doctor. We should have more of these. You should have so much more of these. Shouldn't have taken us until 13 and 15 to do it. But it really makes me wonder, like, when are we gonna have a doctor who explicitly goes, I am non-binary, or I am queer, because that feels like the last frontier, personally. While also acknowledging that we still, like, just one woman doctor and just one non-white doctor is not enough. And I hope that it's not Russell T. Davis when it happens, because that would be so depressing. It took so fucking long, and then it's still the same guy. Like, come on.
I don't know. It's just, yeah, I don't know. The lodger, I hardly knew her. I don't know. I really don't have anything else to say. Like, it's just like next week looks fun. I'm looking forward to talking about next week's one.
I'm so excited for the finale because it's going to be, I love Moffat finales because they're either insane or insane. Mm. And I love insanity.
We all love insanity. We all love Matt Smith playing football. We all love Matt Smith brushing his teeth. We all love Matt Smith in a call center. We all love all these hijinks he gets up to, you know? I don't know. I just don't have any, like... I don't know. It's just so middle of the road that like there's nothing really to like latch onto beyond, you know.
Yeah.
Corden and
it's the most middle of a top 10 list episode you ever seen.
Mm-hmm. And that's a hint, maybe. I don't know. Yeah. I guess that's it. I don't know.
That's it. Bye. Yeah.
Bye. 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 James Corden. Bye.
Next time on Pod Tour, who cast?
There were cracks. Through some we saw silence and the end of all things.
It's the crack in my wall.
Two parts of space and time that should never have touched. Pressed together.
All through the universe, rips in the continuum.
How can it be here? How can it be following me?
I don't know yet, but I'm working it out.
Some sort of space-time cataclysm, an explosion maybe. Big enough to put cracks in the universe. But what?
The universe is cracked. The Pandorica will open. Silence will fall.
Pandorica. That's a fairy tale.
If it is real, it's here and it's opening.
What is it?
A box, a cage, a prison?
That was a goblin or a trickster or a warrior soaked in the blood of a billion galaxies. The most feared being in all the cosmos.
The Pandorica.
More than just a fairy tale.
It's opening.
Your world has visitors.
Daleks, Doctor.
And cyber ships. Sontaran, Slovene, Chelonian, Nestine, Dravin.
But what's in there? What could justify all this?
What are you? What could you possibly be?